Thanks for listening to The Huddle today on ESPN Upstate. I'm Greg McKinney. Alonzo's here. We've got a couple hours to go here on the Thursday edition. And we'll get back to you and your calls at 844-477-3776 in just a bit. If you want to go ahead and hit us with a text on the Health Dare text line, 71307. Please begin your message with ESPN. And we're on Twitter at ESPN Upstate. But on the guest line right now, I want to bring in Mike McGovern. Mike is the tournament director for the BMW Charity Pro-Am presented by Cinex Corporation. Mike, how are you?
Doing great today. How are you guys?
We're doing well. Thanks for coming on here. I've got some news that you guys are putting out today about this year's tournament, Mike. And I guess one of the big things is that you're going to a two-course format. What's that all about?
Absolutely. So what we heard from our amateurs as well as the professionals, and the feedback from them was that the two-course rotation was better for them so they can allow them to have the proper practice rounds prior to the competition rounds that start on Thursday through Sunday. And so the PGA Tour, Web.com Tour, and the Board of South Carolina Charities came up with this new format, which we originally started this tournament with the two-course rotation. And we have a feeling, we have a real good feeling that the amateurs and the professionals are going to really take to this two-course rotation.
All right, Mike. So what does that mean as far as number of players and how you reduce the field and how do you do all that?
Absolutely. So we originally, with the three-course rotation, we had 168 professionals and 168 amateurs play in the event. Now we're going to have 160 amateurs and 160 professionals. They'll each play two golf courses. One on, you know, half will play on Friday and half will play on Saturday. Half will play on Thursday and half will play on Friday, and then we'll make a cut. The amateurs field will be cut to the top 12 amateurs that will play on Saturday, and the professionals will be cut to the top 60 in ties. They'll play on Saturday. And the final competition round will be on Sunday at Thornblade Club, and that'll be strictly professional golf.
Okay. All right. So it's something that golfers have to get used to, right? A cut. So that shouldn't be a big deal.
That's correct.
Yeah. So these two courses will be Thornblade, as you said, and Cliffs Valley. So have you extended your deals with them to kind of lock that in?
That's correct. So we were happy to announce today that we have a five-year extension with not only BMW and Cinex Corporation, but also the Cliffs Corporation and Thornblade Club. And Tim Mervosh from the Thornblade Club was instrumental in getting us that five-year extension. So we'll be having professional golf in the upstate for 5 years per the contract and then many more years to come after that.
All right, so that's good news. And, Mike, typically this thing is held in May. I understand it's going to be June 3 through 9. So what's behind moving it a little later this year?
Absolutely. If you looked at the PGA Tour schedule, we would have been up against the PGA Championship, which is a major on the PGA Tour. And the BMW Charity Pro-Am presented by Cinex did not want to be up against a major. And that was primarily our move. We didn't want to go to Mother's Day weekend. We didn't want to go to Memorial Day weekend. So June 3 through 9 works best for our amateurs, our sponsors, as well as our TV coverage on the Golf Channel, not going against the PGA Championship that moved to May.
Gotcha. Of course, folks that have been out there know how great a tournament this is, a chance to see some really great golf and then meet some pretty exciting celebrities. But the bigger part of this, Mike, is the charity element to this. What, $13 million since 2001? And you guys will be continuing that, I'm positive, right?
Absolutely. So we are having four featured charities this year. It's Greenville Health System, Children's Hospital, Mobile Meals of Spartanburg, as well as the new one this year is Roper Mountain Science Center. And what we're trying to do is raise awareness for those great 501c3s, but at the same time, raise through the tournament the much-needed funds that those organizations can participate in the tournament and raise the funds that they need going forward.
Gotcha. And Mike, you guys will announce celebrities a little later on and put out a call for volunteers a little later on, I'm sure. But how about the website where people can get more information if they want to start planning for this?
Absolutely. It's bmwcharitygolf.com. And we're, just like always, the amateurs will participate in the event along with the web.com professionals and the celebrities that you mentioned. We also have a one-day pro-am on Monday at Thornblade Club and a one-day pro-am at the Cliffs Valley on Tuesday. So we're really excited for this year's lineup. I've already heard from some of the celebrities that they're definitely returning. So this this announcement was long overdue, but at the same time, we're really excited here at the tournament to get into the community and really start focusing on raising the needed funds for the featured charities.
Good stuff. Mike McGovern, he's the tournament director, BMW Charity Pro-Am. Again, it's going to be June 3 through 9 and on two courses, Cliffs Valley and Thornblade this year, with a cut involved in reducing the field for the final weekend rounds there. So, Mike, we appreciate it. Thank you for coming on. Thanks for the update.
Thanks so much for having me, guys, and have a great day.
Thank you. Mike McGovern, tournament director, BMW Charity Pro-Am, June 3 through 9 this year, a little bit later than it has been in the past, but they always have a ton of fun out there with those golfers. And so now they've got it down to two courses, which will be interesting. A little bit easier on people from jumping around. Jumping around to three courses was a little bit more difficult, so they've adjusted the format there on that. Back to a little NFL as we get the playoffs ready to start again Saturday and Sunday. And for the L.A. Rams, Sean McVay, their coach, asked for an update this week on Todd Gurley. I thought this was kind of interesting, the running back out of Georgia. Here's what McVay said about his running back's availability for this weekend.
He's feeling good. He's going to practice. We're going to follow a normal routine as when he's been going this season. So he didn't have any soreness from yesterday, and you know he's going to take part in practice. He was out there for the walkthrough this morning, so very good news on that front. He got a kick out of joking with me that he was real sore today. I didn't think it was that funny.
Yeah, Todd Gurley good to go, even if he is joking around about that. So the L.A. Rams get the Dallas Cowboys. That's the late game on Saturday night at 7:45. First game on Saturday will be the Colts and the Kansas City Chiefs at 4 o'clock. We will have both those Saturday games for you. And then on Sunday, the two games we will have for you. The L.A. Chargers at New England, 12:30 for that one. And then the Philadelphia Eagles at the New Orleans Saints. That's a 4:15 scheduled start. And by the way, this is a late time to be doing this, but the L.A. Chargers have signed a kicker to handle kickoff duties against the Patriots this weekend. They have signed Nick Rose to handle the kickoffs because their kicking game has not been great. As far as kickoffs, they've allowed the most returns in the NFL during the regular season. Their rookie kicker, Michael Badgley, they like for field goals and extra points, but they don't love him for kickoffs. 10 games played during the regular season, he made 15 of 16 field goals, had a 59-yarder against the Bengals, made 27 out of his 28 extra points, so all that's good. But he only had touchbacks on 9 out of 54 kickoffs during the regular season. 16.7% rate was the worst in the NFL among players with at least 10 kickoffs during the year. And they're trying to do this. They are doing this to alleviate a little bit of concern about Cordarrelle Patterson, return man for the Patriots. Averaged 28.8 yards per return during the regular season. He had 195-yard return for a touchdown. Anthony Lynn, the head coach of the Chargers, called him one of the best kick returners he's seen in a long time. That's going to be a big challenge, he said, for the special teams. They do have a good cover unit, he said, but they want deeper kicks. And so that's why the Chargers have signed Nick Rose.
Well, how does this work? Do they have to cut somebody or?
Yeah, and I mean, yeah, the roster is the roster, so I don't know.
Wouldn't that stink to make it the whole year long and be on such a really good team? And
boom! And we need a kicker.
Oh, by the way, yeah. We no longer need your services. We needed two kickers.
Yeah, you don't want to be that last guy on the pecking order. That's what you want. You want to avoid that if you can. Also from New Orleans comes word about Sean Payton. Sean Payton brought in three armed guards and displayed $200,000 in cash the Vince Lombardi Trophy, and a Super Bowl ring at a team meeting. How do you like that? You had to have armed guards when you're going to bring in $200,000 in cash. That's a good idea. This represents how much they stand to make in playoff bonuses if they go all the way. $201,000, according to the collective bargaining agreement. He said, Mark Ingram, the running back, said, guys make good money, but not too often you see $200,000 in cash right there. So that was pretty appealing. And the Lombardi sitting there right in front of it and the ring in front of that. So that's Sean Payton's motivational tactic this week.
Sure, the armed guards weren't there to make sure none of the players kind of went, oh, look at this, and just kind of slip some in their pocket.
Slide off with some of the money.
Well, they never know.
They're there to make sure nobody does that. That's right. Sheldon Rankins, defensive tackle, said, if you saw all that money in front of you, anybody would get excited about that. I'm right there along with them. So, do what you got to do. That's what Sean Payton's doing to get them ready. But the players talk about Sean Payton's ability to lay out a game plan to beat the Eagles on Sunday. And they are confident in his ability to do that. All right, we've got all those games for you here on ESPN Upstate this weekend. Two on Saturday, Colts and Chiefs, Cowboys and Rams, and two on Sunday with the Chargers and Patriots and the Eagles and the Saints. That's another good weekend of NFL action, and looking forward to that coming up this weekend. 844-477-3776, Health Dare text line 71307. We'll take a break and come back with more. You're listening to The Huddle. This is ESPN Upstate. I would like to thank the University of South Carolina for irritating me on my way out the door here, Alonzo. You hear about this. They have changed the logo. Apparently, you've had this age-old debate, who's the real USC, South Carolina or Southern California? Looks like South Carolina's waving the white flag and ceding USC to Southern Cal. They unveiled a new official logo in Columbia yesterday, U of SC.
What?
Yeah. U of SC. Now, this is not going to be the athletic logo. They're keeping the block C with the Gamecock in the middle of it. But for the school, they have basically four logos. That's problem number one. You've heard the old adage, keep it simple, stupid, and I subscribe to that. Pick a logo and stay with it, and leave it alone. Well, they have the formal University of South Carolina logo that, you know, just spells out the words. Then they have a marketing logo that says South Carolina and has the little U of SC in a square. Then for monograms, they have two different ones. U of SC, and then U of SC in a red box. And for athletics, they have the block C with the Gamecock in the middle of it. How confusing could that be? But apparently they will not call themselves USC. That seems to be the message here.
You would think they would consult with alumni such as yourself when they make a major change like this.
I did not get a call. Might have gotten an email. I don't open those anymore. I'm usually just asking for money. I don't know what they're doing. But apparently Dabo was right when he said there's one USC and it's on the West Coast. He knew what he was talking about, like 7 years ago when he got mad after practice that night. I mean, come on. Come on. Yeah, I don't like it. It's just... Yeah, and I know sometimes, you know, you get used to something and you think back, well, I was silly not to like that. I'm not going to like this. U of SC? Does that roll off the tongue?
No, it does not.
U of SC. I don't like the look of the logo. Thankfully, they're not putting that on football helments. I might have to jump off a bridge.
Yeah, I wonder what brought this on. Why did this all of a sudden did this? Or was this in the works for a while and we just didn't hear about it?
I don't know. They obviously probably hired a new marketing firm. And I mean, maybe they did a study. I don't know. I haven't seen an explanation of that.
Well, you're about to have some time on your hands, so I think you should organize alumnus and march on the campus. have them change it back to the way it should be.
I don't have the energy for that, man. Sorry. I can't, you know, that's not my goal for my retirement time here. Just dumb. I mean, Why? I liked that little fight. That little USC fight. What's Southern Cal done lately? I mean, you know, I know South Carolina hadn't been the best, but in athletics, but you know, Southern Cal hasn't
won
either.
Won the women's national championship.
Yeah, we were hanging
in. Basketball.
Got to the Final Four in men's basketball. Had
there
the baseball championships.
Yeah.
Southern Cal's not been doing anything. So, you know, I felt like we were doing all right in that little conflict between East and West Coast. But no, we have waved the white flag at South Carolina. Whatever. South Carolina did introduce the, or at least announce officially, the hiring of Thomas Brown as new running backs coach yesterday. So he comes in. We told you the significance of that is that he's a really good recruiter, and especially in Georgia and Florida. So I'm pretty optimistic that that could help the Gamecocks. He's already out trying to round up some new blood for South Carolina, and they certainly need that at running back. They also announced a contract extension and increased compensation for Eric Wolford, the offensive line coach. Wolford just finished his second season on the staff. And his contract was extended by 2 years, and they increased his pay to $300,000 a year, up $100,000. Ray Tanner mentioned when he was talking about this yesterday that while Wolford wasn't actively shopping for another job opportunity, there were other programs showing interest in him. So this is about making sure that they can keep him around. They like Eric Wolford coaching the offensive line. So that's good. You know, turnover is a big deal with assistant coaches, every place except Clemson. And so Ray Tanner talked about that, how difficult it has become to hang on to your coaches.
This is my seventh year as the director of athletics, and there has been an evolution in that. It just seems like, and you guys probably know better than I do, but that is more prevalent than ever. It's like you mentioned, moving inside the conference and guys making changes and the salaries that are out there. It's a dynamic that I don't particularly enjoy. I think it's reality and you have to deal with it. But it has changed a lot, you know, just since I've been an athletics director.
Yeah, no question about that. So they're dealing with that at South Carolina. Now with Thomas Brown coming in to be the running backs coach, people say, well, what about Bobby? Bobby Bentley will be the tight ends coach. And Pat Washington, who has been the tight ends coach, is, quote, looking for other opportunities. They asked Ray Tanner at this press conference, was that his choice or yours? And he wouldn't answer that. So that means it was the school's choice, right? I would go with a yes on that. Definitely. But here's the thing on Thomas Brown. Good recruiter, good running backs coach. Has been at Wisconsin, Georgia, Miami. He was the offensive coordinator at Miami for 3 seasons. He was the running backs coach under Mark Richt. If you want to know how they did, well, the Canes rushed for 2,489 yards this past season and a bad year for them. So like 191 yards rushing a game. That's pretty good. Travis Homer was a second-team All-ACC runner, and he didn't take over as a starter until 5 games into the season because he had an injury. He didn't have an injury, but Mark Walton did, the guy that was ahead of him. Brown was on Rick's staff at Georgia in 2015, coached that running game, and you know about that Georgia running game, how good it has been for a long time. A statement from Thomas Brown said he was excited about the opportunity, has great respect for Coach Muschamp, known him for a long time, been around Brian McClendon a long time. They played together at Georgia, worked together for a year at Georgia, and always talked about having the opportunity to get back on the same side. He said it's a great place. He's looking forward to it. He coached Melvin Gordon at Wisconsin. Imagine getting somebody like that at South Carolina. That'd be kind of nice. That was back in 2014. He had the second best season ever by a running back, 2,587 yards in 2014 at Wisconsin, 32 touchdowns. And between him and the sophomore Corey Clement, they ran for 3,536 yards. That broke a single-season FBS record for rushing yards by teammates. So, long story short, Thomas Brown's good at coaching running backs. and recruiting them, too. And so maybe, just maybe, South Carolina's running game is about to take a little step forward. Would be kind of nice. Thomas Brown played a lot of football as well. Played at Tucker High School, enrolled at Georgia. They won the SEC championship in 2005 with him there. And he finished up as the fifth leading rusher in Georgia history. In his career, he had 2,646 yards. He led the team in rushing in 05 and 06, averaged 5 yards a carry, scored 25 touchdowns, and was a offensive team captain in 2007. He was picked by the Falcons in the 2008 NFL draft in the sixth round. And then he was with the Cleveland Browns in 2009, and then he retired and went into coaching. So we'll see, but South Carolina has made a move to try to boost the running game. And I'm a fan of that, man. Got frustrated by that running game this year. Been frustrated by that running game for a while at South Carolina. Passing game, I think they're coming around and looking a lot better. But as good as the offensive improvement was, it wasn't because of the running game. Just never got that going. And so Will Muschamp making some moves, like the aggressiveness, and we'll see how that works out. Thomas Brown announced officially as the new running backs coach for the South Carolina Gamecocks, introduced yesterday. 844-477-3776. The Health Dare text line is 71307. Coming up, we will hear from Stephen A. Smith some thoughts on Eric Reed of the Carolina Panthers. Talking about his so-called random testing debate. That's coming up. Stay with us. You're listening to The Huddle for Thursday on ESPN Upstate. We'll be right back. Welcome back to The Huddle on ESPN Upstate. If you want to get in with us, 844-477-3776. Health Dare text line is 71307. So Eric Reed, basically, is it going too far to say Eric Reed is being called a liar? That is basically what's happening, isn't it? He was drug tested this season, but the NFL and the Players Association released a statement yesterday that denies that it was unfair testing and questioned the amount of times he was tested. He is saying he was drug tested 7 times this year. Both the Players Association and the NFL say it was a normal amount of drug testing, whatever normal is. Here's a statement from the two, the Players Association and the NFL. We will not breach any player's confidentiality, but we can confirm that the report documents the dates he was randomly selected for testing and the actual dates of the drug tests. The report also demonstrates Mr. Reed's tests were randomly generated via computer and that his selection for testing was normal when compared to the number of tests players were randomly selected for throughout the league during the time that he was on active roster. There is no evidence of targeting. That's a different kind of targeting, isn't it? There is no evidence of targeting or any other impropriety with respect to his selection for testing. He took a picture of the notice on his locker on December 17th saying he was randomly selected and captioned it number 7 and put random in quotes. He believes he's been singled out and tested way more than anyone else. He went unsigned during the summer after parting ways with the 49ers. He was the second player after Colin Kaepernick to become involved in protests during the national anthem. He feels his political actions were hurting his chance for finding a new team, but he got the job with the Panthers. Players Association filed a grievance in May for alleged collusion against Reed, who eventually signed during week 4, the bye week. And he played a lot this year. He had 71 tackles and interception, played in 13 games this year. Here's what Stephen A. Smith had to say about the Eric Reed situation after this news.
I was told by some folks within the NFL that they were questioning whether or not he was tested as many times as he says he was being tested. I believe in taking the man at his word. I find Eric Reed to be an honorable man, somebody that's standing up for the right issues. I applaud, his fervor, his passion about this issue, and I respect where he's coming from. But it's time to put on your big boy pants and get over it.
Put on the big boy pants, Eric Reed.
You know, when he's building someone up so much, you know something's coming right at the end.
Shot him right back down, didn't he? So maybe this will go away now, do you think? Maybe.
I think Eric Reed kind of has a victim mentality. When you feel like everyone's after you, mm-hmm. that doesn't just go away. So I'd be surprised if this is the last we've heard of it from him. I'm curious, will he still be on the Panthers? I mean, they're getting rid of some guys.
He played pretty well, didn't he?
He did, but, you know, a lot of headaches. They knew that bringing him in.
Yeah.
Is his production on the field worth the headaches?
Well, we don't know what their thought about that is, but this is not an old guy. He's like 27, so he's got some play time left. And I'd be a little bit surprised if they didn't bring him back. And now that this is out, maybe they'll talk to him and say, hey, are you ready to let this go now? Because we don't want to fight this all next year, too. So maybe that would be the approach they take.
But again, he strikes me as a guy, if they ask him to quit talking about it, he'll take that as a, you know, then you don't believe me, and he's going to do it even more.
Well, I mean, the Players Association is supposed to represent him, and they don't believe it.
Exactly. When I saw that Players Association said he's wrong, then, I mean, you know.
Yeah.
So the only one backing you is you.
So it is basically time for him to shut up, right? Pretty much.
Yes, I agree. But I don't think he will.
But he won't. Here's a story from the Columbus Dispatch about Tate Martell. As you told us earlier, Alonzo, he's going into the transfer, what is it? Whatchamacallit? Portal. The portal.
Yeah.
I keep wanting to say protocol. Concussion is protocol. Transfer is portal. You keep those things straight. So about a week after saying, heck no, I'm not transferring out of Ohio State, Tate Martell has changed his mind. Put his name in the NCAA transfer portal. He was the backup quarterback to Dwayne Haskins Jr. in 2018 as a redshirt freshman. He was a two-time Gatorade National Player of the Year at Bishop Gorman High School in Las Vegas. His hopes of being the next guy at Ohio State have been jeopardized by the transfer of Justin Fields, the number two overall prospect in 2018, coming in from Georgia. Justin Fields began classes this past Monday. At the Rose Bowl, Tate Martell was undaunted about the prospect of Fields coming, said he would not transfer. He said this, "Why would I leave for somebody that hasn't put a single second into this program yet? I put 2 years of literally working my blank off into something I've been working for and a dream I've had my whole life. To just run away from somebody that hasn't even put in a single second into winter workouts and doesn't know what the program is all about, there's not a chance. If somebody thinks they're going to walk in and start, it's probably not going to happen. The offense that Coach Day has set for us is an NFL-type offense. It's difficult to learn. It takes a while to get it down." A week later, I'm out. Good grief.
I think it's one thing to hear someone saying that they're looking at the school, but when he's actually there and he's starting classes – and you got to look at it, you know, it's very rare that someone transfers in and doesn't get the starting job. We've seen it happen, but more times than not, the guy coming in, he gets the job.
Well, you know, you said you could beat him out, basically. Beat him out.
Well, maybe you feel like they think less of you by bringing somebody else in.
I understand that.
I mean, that's an angle that you could take, and I would completely get that.
Yeah, everybody has that feeling. You don't want more competition. You want less.
Yeah, you've said all this to me, and now you're bringing this guy in. That makes me think you don't have confidence in me, so I'm going somewhere else.
But you should be used to that, or I, you know, at least know that. Somebody should tell you to be ready for that. Texter says they've already been told he's cleared, talking about Justin Fields. That's maybe, but what are they sitting on the information for if he's been cleared? His lawyer just said yesterday that he expected a ruling within 6 weeks. He's already been cleared to play. They're confident. I think that's fair. They're confident that Justin Fields is going to be cleared to play this coming year at Ohio State.
See, we speculated, would they come up with some other stuff that would clear him? Maybe they have some things and they've let Ohio State know this is what we're going with. And when they find out about this, they're going to clear him.
Maybe. And they told Tate Martell that, and Tate Martell said, okay, see you later. I mean, the fact that Ohio State would tell Tate Martell, yeah, Fields is cleared, would surprise me. They want to keep him. They don't want him to transfer. They want depth.
See, I don't believe they told him.
I don't either.
I think it's what I said. He actually physically sees him on campus. Maybe he looks at him and goes, oh, crap, this guy's built and he's – bigger than me. He's probably better than me. Maybe he saw him throw a ball and he's like, oh, all right, I'm benched. I'm out of here.
I would say maybe he passed him on the way to class, but they don't go to class, do they? Oh, sorry, that was mean.
They do at Ohio State.
Do they really?
Yes, they do. That leadership class, man. A lot of people are signing up for that thing.
They were both in Urban Meyer's class.
That's right.
And that's where
you got to get on a waiting list to get in that class.
You got ticked off sitting in class with Urban Meyer and Justin Fields. 844-477-3776. Back to the phones here in the huddle. Bill's on the line. Hi, Bill. Welcome in.
Hey, guys. I want to get an honest take from you guys. What is your thought, honestly, on these extensions and these raises for the Gamecocks football staff? I mean, do you think it's warranted coming off of the season they had? Or do you think – I think the Clemson game has sort of made them sort of put the buggy before the horse here. I think they – after the Clemson game, there was excitement and some thinking was changed. But do you really think a 7-6 and what he's done with that staff as a whole warrants raises? Well, to me, when you get a raise and you get an extension, it's saying we approve of what you've done.
They're pretty modest, though, Bill. And if you don't do it, you lose guys. I mean, it's sort of expected that if you're happy with them, if you're satisfied with them, you give them a bump. If they don't get the bump, they might start looking elsewhere. And I think, for the most part, obviously Pat Washington is one exception. They didn't bump him. They bumped him on out. But for the most part, I think they're happy with their guys, and they think they're on the right track, and they don't want to lose them. And you'll lose them. I mean, look, the reports are that Eric Wolford was getting looks from other schools. That offensive line at South Carolina has not been that impressive, but apparently he's well thought of enough that he was getting some looks, and they wanted to lock him down. But they gave him $100,000 more. You know, I would like that.
I tell you right now. But, I mean, I just saw it and thought it's just sort of, you know, it's just weird. And I don't know. I just want to get you guys' take on it. But anyway, good show.
Thank you, buddy.
And again, enjoy your retirement.
Thank you. Appreciate that, Bill. I mean, and they're making some adjustments. I'm glad they're not sitting still. And I like, at least on paper, from what I read and hear about Thomas Brown coming in to try to bump up the running game. There's a lot of rumors also that they'll make at least one change on the defensive staff. I'm not going to speculate what that might be, but there's been a lot of talk about that. And they asked Ray Tanner about that yesterday. Could there be more changes on the defensive side? And he basically said, I'm not going to rule that out. There can always be changes. And so
there needs to be changes, and there needs to be better recruits, and there needs to be better coaching, and there needs to be a lot of stuff.
I mean, they are not so well set that you don't need to make adjustments. That would be Clemson. They don't need to make any adjustments. South Carolina's making some adjustments, but they're not throwing everybody out, and I'm good with that. Muschamp's not been there long enough to, I don't think, to be upset about one year that's a couple of wins short of the previous year. They won 9 last year, they won 7 this year. Right? So I don't know that that's enough to say, hey, nobody gets an extension here. The guys that you like, give them a little bump, hang on to them. I don't have a problem with that personally. 844-477-3776. The Health Dare text line is 71307. It's the Huddle on ESPN Upstate. Greg McKinney, Alonzo in studio till 4 o'clock today, and we will be right back. Welcome back into the Huddle on ESPN Upstate. It's Greg McKinney and Alonzo here on a nice sunny Thursday afternoon. A little bit chilly out there. We have temperatures in the 40s for a while here, and possibly some kind of a winter mix off and on at times during the weekend, but nothing too serious expected in our area. We will hope not. Welcome back in. 844-477-3776 is the phone number. Health Dare text line is 71307 here in the huddle. You hear about this story involving the high school basketball player, girls basketball player in Alabama. Maori Davenport is her name. And today comes word that 77 Republicans in the House of Representatives in Alabama are calling on the Alabama High School Athletic Association to restore her eligibility. She goes to Charles Henderson High School. Man, you think the High School League in South Carolina takes some heat? This Alabama High School Athletic Association is getting killed in the past few days on this situation. She was ruled ineligible to play for a season. because last summer she received a payment of $857 from USA Basketball for her participation on a national team. Those payments are not allowed under AHSAA rules, Alabama State High School Athletic Association rules. And a violation of that results in a one-year suspension. Davenport and her family have argued that the family returned the money as soon as they learned it was a violation. That was in November, but it was 3 months after they received the check. The AHSAA issued a statement explaining its reasoning for upholding the decision to suspend her, saying in part that the amateurism rule must be enforced evenly and that granting an exception would undermine enforcement of the rule. So an Alabama lawmaker got involved, announced he would sponsor legislation to provide more government oversight of the AHSAA. This has been featured on Good Morning America. Jay Billis is all over this thing. He's just blasting this High School Athletic Association. The resolution that House Republicans have just passed in Alabama says, whereas Charles Henderson High School basketball standout Maiori Davenport's athletic skills and talents earned her a spot on Team USA and a gold medal at the 2018 FIBA America's U18 Championship, and whereas USA basketball program regularly sends a stipend to players who compete for its teams, but failed to first check with governing sports officials in Alabama before compensating Davenport, and whereas the 18-year-old Davenport responsibly self-reported the oversight and immediately returned the stipend as soon as it was discovered that the check sent to her by USA Basketball exceeded the allowed limit in Alabama. And whereas the Alabama Athletic High School Athletic Association ruled Davenport ineligible to play this season in spite of her sincere and timely efforts to rectify a situation that was no fault of her own. And whereas the AHSAA stubbornly refuses to demonstrate empathy and reconsider its decision despite a state and national outcry on Davenport's behalf by advocates and supporters of amateur athletics, therefore be it resolved that we, the members of the Alabama House Republican Caucus, hereby urge the Alabama High School Athletic Association and its director, Steve Sabarisi, to reinstate Maiori Davenport's amateur eligibility without delay and take significant steps to ensure that no other student athlete is subject to such callous, unfair, and unjust treatment in future situations of similar circumstance should they arrive. How about that? Are you torn on this? She did break the rules. And it's her responsibility to know the rules.
You're probably going to be surprised by this, but this is on her parents. Because if you have an athlete, any kind of athlete, you know that they're not allowed to get paid for this kind of stuff, for anything.
Well, there are differences state to state, Lonzo. There are. I think the number, you can take a little bit of money, you can't take too much money. That's basically what it boils down to.
You know one thing? You don't take any money, then you don't have to worry about violating anything.
Well,
See, I remember when my daughter was playing in rec league softball, and one of the coaches decided to give a dollar to anyone who hit a home run.
Mm-hmm.
And I wouldn't let her accept a dollar.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone thought I was crazy, and they probably already thought that anyway. But I wouldn't let her accept a dollar, and I tried to explain to her, listen, this is amateur athletics. You're not supposed to accept money for this sort of thing. The parents had to know that this was a problem, especially that amount of money.
Well, it's $800-something.
That's a lot of money.
It's a lot of money. But, I mean, you know, a stipend basically is to cover expenses. I mean, you're traveling with this Team USA. You need some expense money.
But why – if they give you the money while you're traveling to get meals and things like that,
right,
I'm fine with that. I mean, because that just makes sense. Why are they getting the check after? So this is a reimbursement for the money that they spent while they were traveling?
I don't know how that played out. It might have been during the time because it took her 3 months to report it. But one thing's for sure, the young girl is not at fault in this.
No, I don't blame her, but I do blame her parents.
Her parents, her high school coaches?
Yeah.
Adults.
All the adults involved, yes.
Yeah, they messed up, and she's paying the price, and you have to sit out a year. So, You know,
one thing about it is, if she's as good as it sounds like she is, she's still going to be okay, more than likely. But it sucks that she has to sit out a year.
Here's a Jay Billis tweet on this. Alabama House Republicans call for the reinstatement of Maiori Davenport. Hey, AHSAA, you made an error in judgment on this. Fix it. You will be applauded everywhere for doing the right thing. That's what Jay Billis thinks about this. So, I mean, he doesn't have a problem with the fact that she took the money and then gave it back. It's become a huge thing. And you got, the 77 Republicans in the House in Alabama calling. This athletic association is just being blasted and nationwide for this. We'll see how they react to it. $857 is a lot of money, and they do have rules, and you kind of understand when they say, hey, look, we can't just say, oh, okay, she didn't mean to. Kind of understand that, don't you? If you're going to abide by the rules, by the letter of the rules, then are you going to let her back in? But maybe they need to take a look at it, or at least, you know, at the very least, here's what I think. They need to come up with, when they're talking to these, there's not that many girls that are playing on USA basketball. They need to help them understand the rules in their state. Before they give them any money, they need to do that. And I know it's tough. You got to check out every state's rule. Alabama obviously has one of the more strict rules about what you can take. But the adults have to protect the young players in this situation. They're high school kids. And Mallory Davenport, Maiori Davenport, is paying the price for this. Now, the pressure is just ratcheted up, though, so I'm not sure that they will not have to back down on this one. It's just been a huge national story since this happened.